Just a cautionary note about this episode. We talk in quite a lot of detail about the TV series Arrow, and because it hasn't completely run its course in all the countries in the world, we just thought we'd better say that this is a spoiler-riddled episode, so as soon as you reach the Pick of the Week section, if you haven't seen all of the series Arrow, you might want to pause and come back to this later. Otherwise, keep listening and enjoy.
They can be a great people, Kal-El. They wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all, this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
Welcome to issue 58 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that's failed this city. I'm Richard Gray.
And I'm David McVeigh.
In this issue, we look at a whole stack of trailers from Avengers Assemble, Batman Arkham Origins, Man of Steel, The Wolverine, and all the latest headlines, plus our kick-ass pick of the week, Arrow Season 1. This is Behind the Panels.
God, I love that.
That's a great theme. Arrow season, well, we're not doing a comic this week. We're doing a whole season of television.
And God love us for it.
Yeah. Because, look, the thing is, this was always intended to be a book club. But the thing is, like every other geek, our love of comics doesn't stop at the end of the page, it doesn't stop between the panels. We're all about being between the panels, behind the panels.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Behind the panels, between the panels, wherever we may lie.
Exactly right. So, like, you know, we've done Iron Man before. Now we're doing Arrow Season 1. And we'll just say that front. We've been loving this show, but we know that's not a universal feeling. And we're going to read out some of your comments that you've sent in to us about that later on in the show.
And I thought we would just, we should put out a disclaimer right now. After Iron Man, I think there was some people going, is this a comic book show? Is it not? We do everything comic book related as well. And I think that's the most important part to think here. I mean, we cover comic book movies. We'll be doing an episode dedicated basically to The Man of Steel when The Man of Steel comes out. We will be doing an episode dedicated to Thor when Thor the Dark World comes out. It's just what we do here, people. And you can damn well bet that we'll be covering Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. when it comes out as well.
I don't know, that's not very good. No, absolutely, we'll be covering all of those things. But before we cover any of those things, David, it's time to crank up the Wayback Machine. I'm hoping it's working this week. We were having some trouble with it last week.
But we oiled the gears a little bit, yeah. So it should be okay.
Let's just see. We'll fire up the Wayback Machine for this week's Vintage Clip of the Week.
Hit the kid. Let's go after them in a cop. The kid broke loose. He's falling.
Gotcha!
Hooray for the girl Marines.
Better luck this time, Owlhead.
Just hold her steady and leave the action to me.
Nice shot, Speedio.
Bring him down, team. There you go. All trussed up like Christmas turkeys.
Swell. But our work's not done yet.
No, siree, sir. There's one more beast on the loose.
An amphibian, right? Leaping lampreys. Look!
Leaping lampreys!
Speedio! And you thought Teen Titans Go was bad.
Yeah, okay. But you know what? There's a certain charm to all of the 60s stuff.
Yeah, a certain charm.
It's because you kind of look at it and go, they kind of either didn't know any better or couldn't do any better. One of the two. I'm not quite sure what it was.
That was from a show we've played before, Superman Aquaman Hour of Adventure, which was like the DC kind of Marvel superheroes hour.
Right.
And that was 1967. Teen Titans appeared three times in that. And that was an episode called The Space Beast Roundup.
So actually help me out here, because this is actually my time in
yep.
DC, obviously. Who were the Teen Titans back in that era? Because the new Teen Titans is what I always knew.
The Teen Titans in that, there was, I think it was, from memory, there was Wonder Girl. There was Kid Flash.
Yep.
I think Wonder Girl was in there. I think we heard Speedy. And I'm trying to remember who the other person was in there. It wasn't Robin. Speedy was the substitute for Robin.
Because in the new Teen Titans in the 80s, when that kind of kicked along, we had Robin, Raven, Starfire, Cyborg, Beast Boy.
Yeah, no, this is way before Starfire.
Wonder Girl was there, though, and so was Kid Flash. So they were both still... So we had a couple of hangers-on from that era that came back for the new Teen Titans.
Yeah.
Which you would think after, you know, 20 years, they wouldn't be teens anymore, but that's beside the point, I guess. So.
No, they were new teens.
That's right. So, you know, some sort of strange thing where... Somebody actually pointed this out about The Simpsons, actually, which is completely unrelated to this, but they were saying that, why is it that nobody ages except for Apu's children?
it was an odd little episode, actually. It was basically some aliens had accidentally dropped some dinosaurs on Earth and had to round them up.
Right.
So okay. The Teen Titans only appeared about three times in that Superman Aquaman Hour adventure.
Is this the same show where you got the Fantastic Green Arrow clips?
No, that was a different show. That was a Super Friends show.
Oh, that's Super Friends. Okay.
And Super Friends had ran for in many different incarnations over a number of years.
Mm.
And Green Arrow. And I'll say this up front, this is actually a point worth making, that Green Arrow, until this recent TV series, hasn't really appeared in media much at all. Like, he appeared in...
he was in Justice League Unlimited.
In the last couple of years he has, but yeah. He was in that one episode that I pulled those clips from,
yep.
The Gulliver's Galactic Goof, I think it was called.
Amazing stuff.
And it's brilliant.
A source of wealth.
A source of, look, you know, just to refresh some of your memory. Source of wealth of things like...
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
That's a t-shirt.
And...
Great Flaming Arrows.
That's a t-shirt.
My Robin Hood's bow.
That's not funnily t-shirt. Enough. We're going to have to make a t-shirt of that.
And it's your t-shirt of...
What in the name of Robin Hood is going on anyway?
No, but I'm going to now.
And, you know, that was... It was a great episode, but that was the only time he appeared until well into the 90s, or maybe it was even the early 2000s, and he didn't turn up again... on television until a couple of different things converged. He made an appearance in the Justice League Unlimited series. He made an appearance in Smallville, which we'll talk a little bit about today just in comparison with Arrow. And he also made an appearance in things like Brave and the Bold, and there was a one-off like DC animated short with
which
him
was
in it,
brilliant,
which is fantastic.
That's actually available as a DVD. It's a compilation of
three
shorts.
I think it's on
shorts.
It's on a compilation separately, but it's also originally it was on like, you know, the one of the Superman Doomsday ones or something.
Yeah,
like
it's
that.
The compilation is actually the front cover is Shazam and Black Adam.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then there's that, and then I think there's also a question. Is a question? There's a third.
It might be, yeah.
There's a third.
But they all
cartoon.
Originally turned up on different discs,
yeah.
And they compiled them. So I think it's interesting that now Green Arrow is one of their biggest properties for DC. Completely, you know, without any planning, it seems. He just ended up that way, and he made perfect fodder for television. Ironically, the character was originally created because he was a Batman clone, basically.
Yeah, we talked about it, and I think it's amazing it's taken 60 years for him to finally...
It's funny because it took him the first 30, 40 years or something of his career to get out of that shadow.
Yeah.
And then, ironically, now the reason I say it's ironic is that now in the wake of something like The Dark Knight Rises and all those, the Christopher Nolan films, they've created a very Batman-esque TV series using Green Arrow.
True. And what I think is also funny is the fact that they make a joke out of that being a Batman clone in the game Injustice.
Mm,
Not the game, but in the comic book, the webcomic that goes along with it. Harley Quinn makes that joke about, you know, being the Arrow Cave is stupid. Why isn't it called the Quiver or something like that?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Arrow Cave doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, exactly. She's going, but with Batman, it makes sense. It's bats live in caves. You know?
Anyway, David, before we get too caught up in caves and bats and arrows, let's just have a quick look back at what we've been reading in the last week or maybe even watching.
Where? Looks like we got ourselves a reader.
Read between the lines, bitch.
I'm going to mention one really, really quick thing, because apart from watching a whole bunch of Arrow and other things we've been catching up with, I read a book last week. It was a new one from Dark Horse called Dream Thief. Knew nothing about it, issue one, and it really took me by surprise. It was it's by Jay Nitz, who's doing the current run of Green Hornet for Dynamite, not to be confused with Mark Waid's, the Green Hornet. But it's basically about this guy who is down on his luck, finds himself, he wakes up and he's wearing this Aboriginal tribal mask and he's killed somebody. And the first thing he says was, I don't know how, but I remember killing this person. I don't remember how I got here. I remember everything about it and they had it coming. And it's kind of like, and the next thing you know, then a few pages later, he thinks he doesn't know what's going on. And he wakes up and he's killed a whole lot of gay porn stars. And it's like, that's just, and that's like issue one. I want to know where it goes from here.
Well,
it's
I've
like,
actually just picked this up, so I will read this because...
It just takes you by surprise. And it's like, you know, that was a minor spoiler there. I'm sorry for that. But it just, I wanted to emphasize just how surprising this book is and that I really intrigued by this concept because they give you that kind of splash.
What I love about that though is because they say any good book should, the first line and the last line are the two most important things about a book. Bring the audience in and leave them wanting more.
Yeah.
And what you've just described is a comic book that did exactly what a good book should do.
It's going to be a 5-issue miniseries, so we'll definitely cover it when it finishes up in 4 months' time. Really took me by surprise. And the art's by Greg Smallwood. It's kind of, and his stuff looks a little bit like what Sean Phillips is doing in Fatale or Criminal. So, really, really impressed with that. I think everyone should go and check that out. David, what have you been reading?
Two quick ones. First one is because one of them you've already mentioned. I just wanted to say that I finally read Avengers Assemble Enemy Within.
Yes.
Read for issue one of that and absolutely adore the relationship between Captain Marvel and Spider-Woman. I think this is the first 5 pages of that book are Kelly Sue DeConnick's writing to a T. This is exactly what I loved about her first take on Avengers Assemble.
It's so funny.
Yes, it's funny and it's fast. And if you listen to the interview we did with her, she writes like she talks.
Yes, yes, you know? very much so.
And if you like the way she talks and you like the way she communicates, that's exactly what she's putting into her female characters. And it's fantastic.
And we should say, if you haven't checked it out yet, if this is your first episode because you want to check out what we have to say about Arrow, go and check out our interview with Kelly Sue DeConnick. We've had a lot of great feedback on that, not least of which is from Kelly Sue herself.
Yes.
and it actually got us into, I'll mention this in feedback, somebody listed their top 5 podcasts on comics, and we were listed in there purely for our Kelly Sue interview.
Fantastic.
So,
we got a huge feedback section today, so we'll come back to that.
Strap yourself in, boys. Strap yourself and girls. In.
The other one I wanted to mention very quickly was I read the Supergirl number, I think it's number 20.
Yes.
Which was the follow-on to the one where Power Girl got her costume. The reason why I wanted to bring this up is not because it's Supergirl or Power Girl or her boobs are out. It's because it's really funny. If you like good humor in a comic book, and it's sinister, but it's the way it's handled is actually very funny. It's her Supergirl has her own version of the Fortress of Solitude, of course, as we know, if you've been reading the New 52. And basically, it's now woken up to the fact that Kara and Karen are the same DNA. And so basically it's now saying, oh, well, there's two of you, so one of you must be a clone, and in the New 52 world, clones are evil and must be destroyed, so the Fortress starts to try and kill them. But all the way through it, the Fortress keeps talking to them, and the Fortress is incredibly polite. And it's like, I'm very sorry to do this, Ankara. But you must be destroyed. I'll make it as painless as possible. It's very funny, so I do recommend, even if you haven't been... Supergirl started high, and it's one of the few New 52s I really have stuck with, but it went through a trough, and that was that whole Hell on Earth crossover and everything that was going on. Now that's over. Supergirl's coming back, and it's actually not as good as it was when it started, but it's not a bad read. It's actually pretty good. So
if you want to read more of the reviews and thoughts that I've had on last week's releases or next week's releases or any week's releases, just hit up behindthepanels.net and check out the review section on there. And there's a lot of reviews going up. And let me tell you, the week after this podcast comes out, or perhaps by the time this podcast comes out, this is a massive week for comics. Like from every studio, every publisher's got 5 must-read titles coming out this week. I will be busy this week.
And I should mention, now that you've talked about when this podcast comes out, somebody mentioned to me the other day, your podcast seems to be late every week. It is actually mentioned on the site, but if you don't go to the site, if you're just downloading the podcast, we should stress the new release day for Behind the Pass is Friday because of work schedules. So because of our days off, we used
to record on a weekend and then have it out by midweek.
That's correct.
We're not recording until a Wednesday night.
So we have to shift the release date to Friday. So at the moment, the actual release day is Friday. Please be aware of that. And that will shift every quarter, so just pay attention. We'll bring that up every time it shifts.
Watch me for the changes and try to keep up. Now, it is time for me to hit the button labeled news, and I hope I hit the right one this time. I'm going to hit this one.
What a scoop!
Writer James Robinson exits Earth 2 along with leaving DC Comics. He follows several writers leaving the publisher in the last year. His final issue will be Earth 2 number 16. At least Mr. Terrific has his T-balls to play with.
Joss Whedon confirms Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver for Avengers 2. He also notes that when the Avengers assemble, Iron Man will answer yes to the call.
Yay. Meanwhile, Iron Man 3 punches through the $1 billion mark worldwide.
Wow.
It was knocked off the top slot by Star Trek Into Darkness. Geeks around the world feel conflicted.
Summit Entertainment has put the writers of Red and Red 2 to work on a third installment of the film based on the Warren Ellison and Cully Hamner comic. Zimmer Frame manufacturers are currently bidding on the contract.
Australian publisher Milk Shadow Books will publish a classic collection called Don Dill, The Showbag Years. The stories originally appeared in Royal Easter Showbags and the Sydney Sun Herald throughout the 1990s.
Fantastic. Archie Comics will release an upcoming issue of Kevin Keller in which the titular openly gay character kisses his boyfriend Devon. While writer Dan Parent, who recently won a GLAAD award, mocks the Million Moms in the story with a woman who apparently, quote, pitches a bit of a fit and becomes an internet sensation when asked for comment.
Archie and Veronica blush.
Warner Brothers Games Montreal has released a trailer for the Batman Arkham Origins game, due out around the world on the 25th of October. It's almost 5 minutes long, so here's a tiny taste of it.
Did you find a body?
No. And next time, keep your other assassins out of my way.
You had your shot, Deathstroke. But you're not the only assassin in town. And the night is young.
That sounds really, really cool.
Yeah, it does indeed.
I really want to see that thing. On the small screen still, unless you're playing your games on a really large screen, Marvel's animated Avengers Assemble is out on July 7th. Here's the new trailer that was just released today.
We're sort of like a team. Earth's Mightiest Heroes type thing. Let's do a head count here. There's me, handsome billionaire genius. The Prince of Thunder. A super soldier. A few super spies. And the new guy. Oh, and yeah. We have a Hulk. The Avengers. That's what we call ourselves.
We're gonna need a team effort here.
Let's do it! Ha!
Avengers, assemble!
Do I know how to pick a team, or what?
I'm impressed.
Oh, of course you are.
Show off.
Yes, and that new friend is Falcon, and the first episode is available for free on US iTunes all this week.
A brand new trailer for The Wolverine dropped this week. It features an old friend at the start and plenty more action and Silver Samurai. Let's listen.
Sure, that's not Silver Surfer, David.
Wake up. Where were you?
Oh, Gene, I'm so sorry.
I'll never hurt you or anyone ever again.
It's too late.
No!
You can't hide.
No,
I've been trying to find the Wolverine for over a year.
It's not who I am anymore.
My employer wants to say thank you for saving his life all those years ago.
Run, now!
There is a time when our enemies knew honor. I wanted to offer you something no one else can. A gift. You have struggled long enough. I can end your eternity. Make you mortal. What they did to me. What I am. Can't be undone. Don't be so sure. I'm not healing like before.
His flesh is weak now.
Eternity can be a curse. A man can run out of things to live for. That day ain't here yet.
And finally, just a few hours before we recorded this, General Zod invaded the Earth. Here's some audio of that tragic circumstance.
My name is General Zod. I have journeyed across an ocean of stars to reach you. Your world has sheltered one of my citizens. He will look like you, but he is not one of you. To those of you who know of his location, the fate of your planet rests in your hands. To Kal-El, I say this. Surrender within 24 hours, or watch this world suffer the consequences.
You will not win. For every human you save, we will kill a million more.
I won't betray them. You already have.
I got to say two things, David. One, that was a lot of trailers.
That was a lot of media. But can I just say very quickly before you go any further?
Yeah.
Can I just say, General, would you mind stepping outside, please? Yeah.
That was, I mean, look, we're a million miles from that first trailer that came out, which was the fishing commercial.
Yeah, well, the Discovery special, yeah. Mm.
This looks like a massive, massive action film now. This looks big, and I don't know why they didn't lead with that, but they built us up to it. Damn, I want to see this film now.
What I think is really unusual about the entire marketing strategy of this film so far up until this point is that what they showed at Comic-Con, before the Discovery special came out, they showed that Discovery special, but with action scenes. And that leaked on YouTube, very poor quality, but it leaked on YouTube. And thankfully, my son, who is a massive YouTube junkie, found it and showed it to me. And all I can think is, if they had led with that, if they showed that to the general public, we would have been much more excited from the very beginning. But they've waited way to the 0 hour to make us excited.
I'm still wondering whether the world wants another Superman movie so close to the last one, which we're still a little bit burnt from, which I didn't hate at all, but I think a lot of people disliked it for various reasons, and I can understand that. But, you know, I think that this has the potential to be a really good Superman film. I'm really looking forward to it. And they've already gone on record to say that this will be the gateway to the DC Cinematic Universe if all goes well.
Absolutely. I read that as well, where they said if this works, this is the first of the films leading up to Justice League. However, that also means that if this film does what Superman Returns did, you can kiss your Justice League movie goodbye.
And probably any other DC movies, and they should probably just retreat back to television, which is where we're dealing today.
And they've had their most success.
Exactly right. Now, for all the other latest updates, head up behindthepanels.net and click on the news category. And just a quick note before we move on, we should really just mark the fact that this is the last week that Geoff Johns is writing a Green Lantern comic.
Aww.
With Green Lantern number 20. It's really, really sad, because I remember first getting back into comics after a long break, reading Geoff Johns' Green Lantern.
Absolutely. In fact, for me, coming back, some of the first comic books I read were Green Arrow, where he's in the forest, which made me want to go back and read more about Green Lantern, because I was fascinated by...
Because that was the whole Brightest Day stuff.
Absolutely, and I thought, I want to know more about this, so I went back and I actually read the Blackest Night and Brightest Day, and I read Birthright. No, not Birthright. What's it called? The where he's reborn.
Rebirth.
Sorry, yeah. Rebirth. I read Rebirth, and I literally just gorged on Green Lantern because it was magnificent storytelling.
Look, we're talking about an almost decade-long character-defining run, and Robert Venditti, who's taking over, has got some very, very big shoes to fill. Still looking forward to reading this book. I actually went back through and caught up on all the Lantern I'd missed in the last couple of weeks. And man, are we going to miss Geoff Johns, because even though his writing's been failing, or faltering, I should say, on some of his other books, it has never slipped up on Green Lantern.
Vibe?
Yeah, okay. Let's just, I don't know what that is.
It seems to be some sort of pet project.
So you mean Justice League of America's vibe?
Justice League of America's vibe and Justice League of America, actually.
Which isn't bad.
Both of these books are kind of on shaky ground with me, though. And it's like, but Geoff Johns himself has said one of the reasons why he's leaving Green Lantern is the fact that he wants to dedicate more time to Justice League of America and so forth. So he is really trying to head in that direction. So it's going to be very interesting to see where, if he can lift the game on those to where he lifted Green Lantern. And it'll be interesting to see if all the writers who follow can keep Lantern where it is.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think this particular writer is taking over several titles. So it's going to be interesting to see if he manages to keep the same kind of cohesive feeling that Geoff Johns did, who was very good at creating these massive, massive epic events contained entirely within the Lantern universe.
Agreed.
So, look, you know, Geoff Johns, we wish you best of luck in whatever you're still doing now, which is running an empire.
Well, and let's be very clear. Geoff Johns is basically running the media division as well. So any potential films and stuff coming up and TV shows, this is Geoff Johns' baby.
I'm going to be a little hesitant going into the new Green Lantern, but that issue 21 is going to have to be pretty damn good. But speaking from one DC, long-standing DC property to another, it's time for us to look at our pick of the week.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
My name is Oliver Queen. For 5 years, I was stranded on an island with only one goal. Survive.
Oliver Queen is alive.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish to use the list of names he left me and bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become something else.
I love that music.
That's got to be one of the best opening themes of a TV show in years.
Every single episode, they've got the hiccup, and then it kicks in that music, and then the Arrow logo comes on. It's just like, yes!
Alec, this is the thing about the show. It is a good, serious take on superhero films and the whole genre, really. I mean, this is, as a geek, and for people who may have just joined the show for the first time, I'm going to go on record. I am possibly the world's biggest Green Arrow fan.
I would say that that's probably very true. Yeah,
I literally have every single issue going back as far as Green Arrow has had single issues.
But more importantly, you've read them all.
And I've read them all, and I've got about a dozen statues, and I've rebought them as trade paperbacks and hardcovers and rebought those in new editions.
I never actually thought in my lifetime I would meet a huge Green Arrow fan.
And I never thought I would be. And this is the thing. I first got into the character probably around the time I was reading the character prior to his quote-unquote death. And really got back into it in a big way when Kevin Smith started writing.
Mm.
And from that point on, that was about 2000, 2001.
And I have read that run now. That
run is Quiver. And this series actually takes a few pages out of the series that follows Quiver, which is when Judd Winnick eventually took over. But, you know, I really like this character for all the same reasons that people like Batman, which is really interesting because, as we were saying before, what they've done with this book, with this TV show, rather, is make it very much like the Batman films. And I like the character because he's very much like Batman in the sense that he's just a guy who patrols the night, has no superpowers. And this is one of the things that we should say about this show up front, is that it is very much sticking to that same rule that probably the best run of Green Arrow, if you're ever looking, which was Mike Grell's run, same rule that had. No capes, no powers. It's just a guy, urban hunter in the city trying to protect it, and it gets kind of violent sometimes. And point of fact was that that Mike Grell run was one of the first mature readers comics in the DC's main run.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and that was that first came along.
So that was kind of like their Max line.
Yeah, it started with a miniseries called The Longbow Hunters, which I'll talk about a little bit more later. And then it moved into this historic 80-issue run that Mike Grell, I think, wrote and drew all of them. He may not have drawn. There might have been a few that he didn't draw. I think it's, you know, a few fill-in issues. But and Mike Grell, we should say, is back on the book in a way. He's doing the tie-in comic.
Yes,
every couple of issues of the tie-in comic.
He's doing almost all the covers, and he's illustrating some of them. So.
Yes, yeah, and the ones that he illustrates is just so iconic because it's like being transported back to that era. But let's just say this show, you heard basically that little stinger at the start where Oliver Queen, giving me a week off, explained, you know, what the show is about. It really is a very simple setup. It takes that very simple Green Arrow origin story, which was that he was stuck on a desert island, became the awesome archer that he is, and then went back to his home city and decided to protect it as a Robin Hood archer type character. What they've done with this, though, is they've taken a series that only came along a few years ago, and which we've covered previously on the show, Green Arrow Year One, written by Andy Diggle and illustrated by the amazing Jock. Taken that, but used that as the backstory that peppers every episode.
And then did what J.J. Abrams created with Lost,
yes,
in running two parallel stories simultaneously. Mm-hmm. So instead of going, okay, the pilot's going to have a long drawn-out period on the island, and then he's going to get back and be Green Arrow. Instead, they said, no. 5 years is a very long time on an island, so let's tell these two stories together and show how they kind of interlock with each other. And so we've got these wonderful flashbacks, and even the filmmaking is really wonderful in this, where the flashbacks have got that kind of desaturated, grayish look to them and everything. Yeah. So you always know where
Terrible
wigs, and apparently as his hair gets longer, the wigs get worse as well. So
Because
his hair is getting longer throughout this series when he's on the island. And we saw in the very first pilot episode, he's got really long hair, so we're going to get to that point.
Yeah, so the series opens up with him with a massive beard and a massive shock of hair, obviously at the end of the 5 years.
Exactly. Well, that's because that's where he's rescued.
Yeah.
So it's almost like we're playing it out in reverse.
We are a bit, and it has got that bit of a vibe to it. But really, if you're comparing this to the comics, you're looking at three eras. You're looking at that Year One miniseries, which is excellent. You're looking at that kind of Mike Grell era which was the 80s, early 90s, for that gritty urban hunter thing. And for a lot of the storylines, you're looking at the Judd Winnick stuff, which was pretty much a lot of the stuff leading up to
Count Vertigo.
So a lot of the stuff that was pre-Flashpoint.
Right.
Not immediately pre-Flashpoint, although there is a couple of stories in there that he wrote, which when we get to the finale of this season, almost scene for scene.
Right.
You know, so that kind of stuff. But there's a lot of other stuff. If you just want to indulge me for a second, there's a lot of other stuff from those comics that makes it into the series. And some of them are Easter eggs. Some of them are flat-out references, and some of them are just really cool. So you've got Felicity Smoke, who we'll talk about a little bit later on. She's actually in the comic. She's Firestorm's stepmother, but also an IT person. You've got Draken, who's an assassin from the early Winnick era. You've got China White from the Year One. You've got Vertigo, who was a long-standing Arrow rogue. And in fact, the very first solo book that he had was a miniseries, and Vertigo was the villain in that. Merlin, another long-standing Arrow rogues gallery. You got Deadshot, you got Huntress, you got their own take on the Royal Flush Gang. You got Shadows popped up, you got Deathstroke, you got Eddie Fires. Well, there's a lot of changes there because Fires would work with Arrow just as much as he'd be working against him. You got Roy Harper's turned up, Dinah Lance in a very different role. She's not Black Canary, but you've got Batman villains like Firefly. Kate Spencer, I noticed when I was looking back on these, she was like a character called Manhunter in the comics. It was a sort of brutal mercenary character who would kill people when the justice system failed, and she was a lawyer.
Oh, okay.
But she just turns up as a lawyer in there, but didn't seem to have any, right. You know, mercenary ambitions. Ted Gaynor, one of the Black Hawks, turned up at one point.
Absolutely.
You know? And even Yao Fei is a character in the comics as well.
And we've also got, I mean, you mentioned we've also got the big guns, of course, were we've got Floyd and Wade and...
Yes, you got Deadshot, you got Deathstroke in there.
These are the major players.
You've got Black Canary, for want of a better word, because you've got Dinah Lance in there, though she's not Black Canary yet.
We got Speedy.
You got two Speedies, in fact. You've got...
Well, we got Speedy and a wannabe Arsenal.
You've got his sister Thea, rhymes with Mia. And you've got Roy Harper, who desperately wants to find him and wants to be what we think is his sidekick. But there's other references as well. They mention Bloodhaven, which is where Nightwing's from.
Yes.
They mention Coast City a couple of times.
We've had a mention
to Ferris Industries aircraft. So there's a bit of Green Lantern stuff in there as well. So, you know, the two closest ties we have are the Batman universe and the
Green Lantern universe. What we haven't heard mentioned yet is Metropolis, and I'm waiting for that to drop.
So some of those are clever like that. Others are just really weird that they've called the place Starling City. It's called Star City in the comic. Why they've added the Ling, and I think one of our listeners mentions this a bit later. Character name references. There's a Judge Grell.
Yes,
his sidekick, which is an awesome character as well. We should mention he has a someone who starts off as Oliver Queen's bodyguard, but becomes his closest confidant and partner, Diggle, as an ex-army, ex-marine, becomes his thing. A little Team Arrow for modern, is kind of taken from the modern.
The Team Arrow kind of, but say from the very first, I think it's two or three issues of the New 52 Green Arrow, we have a little team of nerds.
And they actually directly reference their comic book origins and the fact that they're not going to call him Green Arrow in the series in this little clip here.
The thing that people forget is that Robin Hood was a criminal.
And stealing from the rich to give to the poor is really the job of the Democrats.
Ha. All joking aside, Commissioner, crime is down for the first time in 5 years.
That's because of the changes my department has implemented.
Or perhaps it's because the vigilantes' activities have had a chilling effect on the city's criminals.
What are your thoughts, Oliver?
I think the vigilante needs a better code name than the Hood, or the Hood Guy.
I agree.
How about Green Arrow? Lame.
Lame. Which brings us to Stephen Amell, who plays Oliver Queen and Arrow. I think he actually brings a fair bit to the role.
Now, an actor I've never heard of before.
I'd seen him before in Hung, which was an HBO series.
Okay, and he's also been in Vampire Diaries.
Yes, yeah. That was the thing I first saw him in, and he was quite good in that because he was playing this really dopey kid from the sticks who became kind of the rival pimp. Sorry, the rival hoe, using the show's terminology, not mine.
Right.
To Thomas Jane's character. And he was really good because he was kind of a bit thick, but his girlfriend was seeming to be a bit of a hayseed, and kind of he was being a bit used, and then he sort of got his own back, and you could see that he had comedy chops, which is interesting because this show takes itself so seriously.
And what's interesting about his character is that for the first, I think, the first five or six episodes, I'm getting confused now, first five or six episodes of this show, he played it so deadly straight.
Mm.
And my wife actually didn't like the show. She said, there's no humor in it, and she didn't like. She thought, does he have another emotion? But what's happened is he's grown into the character.
Yes.
And he's starting to bring a lot of life to that character, which I really like. I actually really like him as an actor.
It's funny, a lot of people found it slow at the start and haven't really been able to get into it. Shiny Glitterbug just hit me up on Twitter to say that she really wants it to be better than it is, but she's still persevering with it. She just can't get into it. And I told her to stay the course, it gets better. And we had a few comments to that effect later on, but I think levity is eventually given to it as the team starts coming together. And I've just written in my notes here, Felicity!
Absolutely.
Mark. And a big part of that is Felicity Smoke, who is completely different to her comic book counterpart. As I said, she was Firestorm's stepmother. She's the CEO of an IT company. Here, she's kind of the ditzy IT person. And a few people have taken exception with this, but I really like her, apart from the fact that she's cute as a button.
Oh, she's gorgeous. What are you talking about?
She brings a lot of the levity to the show because she is kind of us in a way. She's kind of coming in going, you guys are taking this way too seriously. What's going on? A case in point is this beautiful scene from late in the season between Diggle and Felicity.
There you are. Thanks a lot, man. This was snuck past security. One of Merlin Jr.'s bimbos. She's pissed he never called her back.
Copy that. I read the tabloids.
Yeah, thanks again. Let's go, Barbie. Your new last name ain't gonna be Merlin.
But I love him. He's my man. My knight of shining armor.
She's such a great character, and I like, I know, I mean, she is like always beautifully done up, and she's like, you know, like perfect, you know, blonde, you know, character, as beautiful as the, all the other women in Oliver Queen's life,
but quirky as hell.
Yeah, I mean, she's, I mean, look, you know, people have complained about her, you know, being the some you know, quote unquote stereotypical IT person. I disagree. I've never seen anyone IT quite that good looking, but also the fact is, you look at other shows like, let's look at, I think was it NCIS? It has kind of like the meant to be the alternative girl with the kind of pigtails out the
Polly
side.
Parrot. That's right.
Yeah, and she's got the pigtails out the side, and she's always like, you know, dropping references and stuff. And it's like, no, I'm sorry, Felicity's probably closer to the fact because there are cute geek girls out there, and you know, they have lives outside of... Well, she doesn't really have a life outside of... She's always dropping these Freudian slips.
I love her relationship to computers as well. She'll yes. Literally, at one point, she redoes all of his computers. He goes, why did you do this? She goes, because it hurt me.
Yeah, I need to see that. I mean, look, the thing is, it still is, despite that, it's an adult show. It's not aimed at a younger audience. DC have done that really well with their animated fare, most recently with Young Justice and the Batman animated series, mm-hmm. and lots of stuff beforehand, and the ones we mentioned before, Justice League. But it doesn't try to get too broad. And as I said, it's not afraid of fan service either. It has those at least three.
Oh, and there's so many, as you pointed out before, there's so many references in this. Every single episode, they'll drop at least one Easter egg on you.
Yeah.
And if you are a fan, in fact, I've got a clip from an interview. We'll play this really quickly. I've got a clip from an interview, which is Stephen Amell basically talking, basically saying, what does the show, he's asked basically, what will this show give people? What do you expect people to do with this show? Have a listen.
And then finally, do you have a message for fans as they get ready, or future fans, I should say, as they get ready to watch the first episode? We're creating a whole new
level. Enjoy, and come back for the second week, because you know, you think that we had so long to shoot the pilot and not as long to shoot the second episode. I like the second episode better. And if you're a comic book fan, we got a lot for you. And if you're not, you can jump right in.
And I think that's the key right there.
He must lower his voice like 7 octaves.
I know. Yeah, absolutely. But I think his little last sentiment there is very, very important, which is, if you are a comic book fan, you're going to get lots out of this.
Yeah.
But if you're not, that's okay. It's still just a great adventure series. Yeah. And it doesn't matter if you get any of those
references.
That's
what's going to be, because this is Green Arrow year one. This is really his first year on the job. It's him working out the character. And even as a Green Arrow fan, I'm discovering it each week, and I think they did a really good job in this first season of creating a big bad, and I don't think we're going to spoil anything by saying it's played by the great John Barrowman.
Who's just chewing the scenery. Yeah. I mean, he's just having so much fun in this.
When they introduced the younger character, Tommy Merlin, I knew Merlin was a villain in the comics, and I thought, okay, that's interesting. What's he going to do? He could go the jilted boyfriend angle, he'll become a villain. But it turned out it was his dad was the villain. He's the one pulling the strings, and he's not only the sort of evil shadow businessman with a big undertaking in the city, and we'll talk about the undertaking in a moment, but he's also sort of the other archer, the dark archer. He gets around in sort of a black arrow, you know, black hooded costume.
And there's no explanation as to why.
Why, no. So that's interesting as well in itself, and I think it gave this series a really good sense of direction, and we're interested to see now they've sort of gotten... Spoilers, people! Massive, massive spoilers! If you haven't gotten to the end,
we're going to put a spoiler warning at the beginning of the show. It's all right.
So, by the end of this first season, that character is not possibly going to be around for the next season. So, how they're going to keep that momentum? They're basically starting from a new kind of villain next season.
Yeah, which is they've taken a page out of Buffy's book.
Yeah, but that's,
this is
exactly
a new big bad every season.
And look, you know what? They've dropped in so many villains that can return. I mean, we've still got China White to return and things like
and
that.
And Deadshot's still out there. And you know, Wade is kind of working with him on the island, but Deathstroke will come back into this.
And the thing is, they've also kind of got a minor villain, kind of an anti-villain in a way, in Detective Lance. played by Paul Blackthorne, who everybody loves.
Who I absolutely adore. And if anybody's wondering where they've seen him before, he was in a very short-lived TV series called The Dresden Files, which is where he played, it was basically a detective series that lasted 13 episodes or something like that. And he was a wizard who used to solve crimes. And it was produced by Nicolas Cage. And it was a great little series, but didn't get any ratings, of course, and died off. But if you ever get a chance to go see that, you'll see a very similar character to what he's playing with Detective Lance, except with more of a sense of humor.
I'll just read this out quickly, because we may not get a chance to get through all the feedback a little later on. It was actually Tristan Maiolo, one of our longtime listeners, and he's contacted us before, has said that you know, he loves the show so far, although some of it has some big plot holes and bits and pieces which don't make a hell of a lot of sense. I want to get on to some of my issues with the show.
Okay, yep.
I've just looked past those and still really enjoy it. I can't wait for season two, but I have been watching The Dresden Files, which has Paul Blackthorne in it, and I really like his acting.
There he is.
So I just wanted to mention that. Some of the issues I have with the show. Now, Green Arrow, in the thing, the Hood, the Vigilante, kills a fair bit in this series.
He does.
Green Arrow does not kill.
He
killed twice.
Oh, twice, okay.
Now, history of the and both times have been major effects. Back in the Longbow Hunters, he kills Dinah's kidnapper. And it's a major, major turning point. So much so that the whole series got a lot darker after that. Oliver's actually in therapy dealing with the fact that he's killed somebody. It's actually a major thing for him to have to kill somebody. Made the thing much darker, but also another time was more recently in the whole Justice League Rise and Fall Cry for Justice saga that they did, where actions of Prometheus ended up killing, ultimately wound up killing Roy Harper's daughter, Liam.
Right.
Arrow went and killed Prometheus, shot an arrow through his head. It was cold-blooded too. He just turned up and shot him unarmed, you know. And they're both defining moments in the
pre-Flashpoint. It's actually one of the things that led him to go live out in the forest, isn't it?
Well, ultimately he got eventually exiled. He got he fessed up to it. He got captured. He caught. He was tried, and rather than convicting him because of everything good he'd done for the city, they exiled him. And that's why he ended up living in this forest, which was basically the end of the pre-Flashpoint.
Exactly, which is where I came into this whole thing.
Some of the other things, like, you know, this show has a very soap opera kind of feel to it.
Which one of our feedbacks is going to address as well?
Dinah Lance doesn't quite feel like she's Black Canary yet. There are some missteps. There's Huntress. Great episodes. One of them is written by Geoff Johns. Mm. But you and I think, agree that she's a little miscast.
Yeah, the actress who plays Huntress, whose name eludes me at this point.
Her name's Jessica DeGaulle.
Thank you. Is awful.
I'm going to play just a little brief clip with her in it.
Okay.
Relax. Relax, relax, relax. Now, pull back gently. You need all three fingers to come off the bowstring at the same time. Relax. Breathe.
This is a waste of time.
I'm trying to teach you something.
What, the least effective way to shoot people?
No. Control. To use a bow and arrow requires patience and discipline.
Until that final line, it didn't sound like he was teaching her to use a bow and arrow.
No.
And that's
actually one of her better. That's actually one of the better parts of her performance.
One of the other minor quibbles we're going to have is the face mask. He just sprayed on,
which he can seem to spray on and take off very
really quickly.
I
just think the little diamond mask needs to come in. That's all that needs to happen.
Also, I would actually also argue that we need the goatee.
Yeah. He needs to. I mean, that's all. But this is still young Arrow, so we'll get there. Finally, the big plan, Merlin's undertaking to level the Glades, felt a little too League of Shadows to me. It felt a little bit like the Batman Begins plot.
Yeah.
You know, it was just, they're taking too much of a leaf out of that. But I'm not going to quibble over it, because it was still a damn good conclusion to this
thing. Yeah, and when you compare this to, and there's going to be inevitable comparisons to Smallville, all right? It's lots of pretty people, it's DC Universe, but DC Universe where they don't want to actually show superheroes. You've all seen Smallville, you know what we're talking about here. But I'm actually very happy to report that it's not Smallville. And there's a lot of people who got turned off of it because they went, oh, it's just more like... My wife was another one who went, oh, it's more like Smallville. Now, I'm not going to defend Smallville. Smallville was a guilty pleasure for me. It was it was a terrible, melodramatic, silly show.
Which this can be sometimes, but not to that extent.
Absolutely. But I was compelled to watch Smallville because I'm a geek, and I watch Smallville because, you know, I'm a geek. But I can separate myself enough to say it's awful.
Yeah.
But I kind of had pleasure in that awfulness. But that being said, I think this show is actually a really good show. Yes, melodramatic at times. Yeah. Absolutely.
Even if I wasn't a comic book geek, this would be a good show.
Absolutely. And you sit there and go, it keeps me wanting to come back each week because it's a really good adventure series, you know, basically.
Now, look, we better wind this up quickly because we've got a little bit of feedback to get through before we sign off. David, I love this series so much. They just announced this morning that the actor who plays Roy Harper, it had already been announced that he was, I think his name's Colton Haynes from Teen Wolf. He was already been announced he's going to be a series regular in season two, but he's also said in an interview that they're going to bring in a lot more DC characters. And it's going to be a lot more. There's going to be a lot more teamwork happening. So whether that's going to be leaning towards a DC team or a Team Arrow, we're not quite sure yet. But really looking forward to the second season. October can't come fast enough.
Absolutely, and apparently it's already been announced that they're pre-ordering season one Blu-rays and DVDs in America for September.
Yeah.
So it's moving. And look, for our Australian listeners, I'm really sorry it took so long.
Yeah.
To get here.
We don't, I mean, Channel 9 really dropped the ball on this one, but thank God for iTunes US. That's all we can say.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, I would have been, you know, forced to do something bad.
And that would have been bad.
That would have been bad.
And that wouldn't have supported what the is show, a great
which
show.
I really, really want to
Absolutely.
Support. I want them to have my money. now, David, that is it from us. I think you should hit up some girl from Ipanema because I want to give a little bit of feedback we've had from our listeners this week.
Absolutely. And here she comes.
Hey, girl. We've already heard from Tristan. So Greg Cox says about the show, started at rough, but then had me waiting to watch it every week. One of the best superhero shows around. Joel Barker said something happened early on that made me stop watching. I don't remember what it was exactly. But hearing you guys rant and rave about it week after week, I went back and caught up. Now I need to know how the season ends. We just told you. Oh, we didn't actually. We sort of didn't mention the fact
But as I said, we're going to put a disclaimer at the beginning. This whole episode is considered a spoiler. So we warned you last week.
Yeah, like the big ending to this season was actually very much based on Judd Winnick's heading into the arc story line. So go and have a look at that. Arrow and Merlin fighting on a roof, city blowing up around him, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Samuel MC, or Samuel Mook, said it felt like it was overproduced soap opera in which the characters discuss their feelings and not act it, except when that single tear is needed. Plus, the nerd who looks as glamorous as the rest of the female cast is forced to wear glasses and talk fast. Was the aim to be for her to be adorable? Well, it failed. She hurt my eyes every time she came on screen.
She didn't hurt mine.
No. She. The only thing that was hurting was...
Yeah.
Was Matthew Kay says that... Matthew Katusiak, our regular Matthew Kay, says Paul Blackthorne is as great as Laurel Lance's father. He was awesome on 24 as well, apparently.
Oh, really?
Oh, there you go.
Well, there you go.
And you had a bit of feedback too, David.
We have a letter from our absolutely greatest fan of all time, who's been with us since the...
Nicholas!
Mike from Canada has written in. Mike from Canada. Now,
I've never heard of him.
I'm going to have to dance around this a little bit because I think he needs to stop sending his emails from an iPhone because some of this is a little bit typed badly. But anyway.
You got to keep in mind, he's from Canada.
Well, there is that too. But he says, ahoy, hoy, Sir David and Squire Grey. Hopefully this will make your Arrow episode. Ta-da! Arrow...
we cut it out, didn't we?
Arrow is just one of those shows that will cause me to neglect my infant son, whom my wife named David Richard from Canada. Crazy, right? the show is great once the melodrama is out of the way, and highlights from this season are Manu Bennett, Pre-Island Ollie, and David Ramsey. Remind me, who's David Ramsey in this?
I think David Ramsey's Diggle, but I'm going to have to look it up.
Can you look that up while I finish this? Manu Bennett, absolutely, that's Wade, and yeah, absolutely. And Pre-Island Ollie is a lot of fun too, yeah.
David Ramsey is Diggle.
Okay, thank you. I thought it was Great Time to Kill Tommy, but I look forward to his return as Black Lantern. I saw the Ferris logo. What a great twist that would be. I really like how they set a lot of the story arcs up, that they have a long-term plans, Slade-Ollie relationship, the destruction of Starling City, hopefully the Ling part, so we can just call it Star City. Mm. Agreed. Well, now that they've destroyed half of it.
The city that destroyed the Ling. Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. The fallout with Merlin, and of course, the Speedy dilemma. If Thea becomes Speedy, I will be writing you guys a strongly worded message.
We don't
says.
Create the show.
No, we don't. And we agree with you. Thanks for making my yard work easy. And I look forward to your list of top 12 comic book films of 2013, Mike from Canada. There probably will be 12 by then. All right. So thank you, Mike. Great to hear from you. Thank God you're back.
Speaking of top lists, we want to give a big shout out to BethBethBeth01.tumblr.com, who put us in her current top five comics podcast.
And
that was based on, she discovered us from our Kelly Sue interview, which you can discover too, and said that she's liking what she's hearing so far. So thank you, Beth, for that. Also, last week I went through a whole lot of search terms that led people to our site. Most of them were sexually related. So this week I was happy to report my favorite search term that somehow got people to behindthepanels.net was how to knit or crochet a Batman cowl.
And if somebody does crochet or knit a Batman cowl, I would like one, please.
Oh, I totally want one. David, that's looking more or less like the look, feel, shape, and smell of a show.
I think it does a little
bit. We've gotten through this. As we've said, we love Arrow in all of its ways, shapes, or forms. We cannot wait until season two kicks off. Bring on October. Look for behindthepanels.net because we'll be putting any updates and rumors and photos and trailers and things like that that we get between now and then. And, of course, on the show, we'll be talking about it between now and then. Next week, there's a bit of a connection with next week's pick. We'll be doing Snapshot by the Green Arrow Year One team of Andy Diggle and Jock.
And what a team they are. So I haven't read this yet, so I'm really looking forward.
I've read all but the final issue, so I can tell you it's pretty good so far.
I can't wait. Can't wait.
Really looking forward to bringing you that. Before we sign out, we'll just say that if you want to support the show, you can do so in two or three different ways. The best way you can support the show is by subscribing to us on the iTunes feed. And leaving a comment and a rating there. Uh-huh. The second way you can support the show is by heading to behindthepanels.net, looking around the site, and also clicking on the Cafe Press merchandise link over on the right-hand side, buying something from that, all the proceeds, buy a T-shirt, you can buy a mug, and soon there'll be things like hoodies and clocks and all sorts of things, but T-shirts and mugs are the main things. All that money comes, the profits of that come to us,
And the rest goes to Cafe Press.
and the rest goes to Cafe Press. But we get some money out of that. It helps us fund server costs, our trips to conventions and things like that. So, you know.
And one last thing, because it's only 4 weeks away now. Mm. Please send us, write to us on Facebook or feedback at behindthepanels.net. Let us know if you're going to be at Supernova, when you're going to be at Supernova. We're going to be there. We'd love to meet you. Mm.
And the other way you can support this site is by, of course, telling your friends about it and getting them to do all those things I just said. Hit us up at the usual places, behindthepanels.net and facebook.com/behindthepanels. David?
Leave us a voicemail on Skype using the handle Geek Actually.
Or you can go to the site and get the
other phone number.
Phone number there as well. But until next time, and we'll be looking at Snapshot by Andy Diggle and Jock, I'm Richard Gray.
I'm David McVeigh.
And this is Behind the Panels.
A brand new trailer for The Wolverine dropped this week. It features an old friend at the start and plenty more action. Oh, and Silver Surfer. Let's listen. We'll do that again.
Okay.
Did I say Silver Surfer?
Silver Surfer.
All right. Take two.